everybody. Welcome to another 0.5 episode. I feel like I'm just diving. I feel like I'm invading your space.
That's okay. You're more than welcome to.
You told me that you wanted to do a 0.5 episode on Mary Magdalene. And I was like, oh, I gotta be a part of it. I need to talk about that movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, so maybe just we can like do another little tiny intro of ourselves so that maybe the audience that is listening can know. So we have a special 0.5 episode today. It'll be myself, Gerardo, with Anthony.
Hey, everybody.
And for those who aren't watching on video, we are sitting on my couch in my basement watching the film we're talking about. So we'll probably be popping in and out of it and kind of dueling this 0.5 because we both were really enraptured by Mary Magdalene, right?
Yep. So I had to invade your space at bedtime, no less.
Yeah.
This is Gerardo's bedtime, but I rapped on his door and I said, fire up the engines. Let's get this thing done. We have to talk about this movie. We've wanted to talk about it for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of been on the burner. A lot of stuff has happened. Your film premiered and did well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Our film.
Yeah, that's right. but yeah, it's interesting now having a bit of space and time from it. I remember when we first watched it, we were both like, oh my God, this is like a revelation of cinema and looking at biblical stories and women. You know, like I was really taken aback from it. But maybe we should just kind of dive in. I think the first thing I wanted to ask you was, oh man, that intro is so gorgeous. Sorry, we might get distracted because we're also watching it.
The visual beauty of it is right before us. And there will be spoilers in this discussion for sure. So if any of you are interested in this movie and haven't seen it yet, which I urge you to see because it is so beautiful and it has meaning for not just people raised in a Christian context, but especially for people for whom the figure of Jesus is at all precious. It is.
Yeah. And gorgeous. Actually, let's start there with that question. Like, I think, well, why is it important to watch a biblical film in this day and age? In 2020, with all the chaos and the wildness that's gone in the world, why is it important to look back and look at these stories? So I guess I wanted to ask you a little more directly, Anthony, is what was your perception of this film? Does it come across to you as like a straight biblical story, or is there something unique that it's doing?
It's a good question. I don't know that I can speak to ways that this movie is relevant to our times other than that it's universally relevant. It's a great feminist tale, for one, so there's that to love about it, but it's got this message that is delivered at the end in this gorgeous speech from Mary Magdalene, played impeccably by Rooney Mara. Mm-hmm. It's after the death of Jesus. Spoiler alert, Jesus dies.
I didn't mean to like snicker at that. I was like,
you're going to hell.
He dies.
And she's talking with the disciples who have been overall reluctant to bring her in, this woman coming when they've already established their discipleship. The 12 have already formed their, you know, little group of bros. And in comes this woman who's just gung-ho about Jesus's message. Well, they've mostly warmed to her, but Peter and her have this conflict at the end. And she says, Peter, he is risen. He is alive. And he says, why would he show himself to you?
Yeah.
Why you? Why does that matter? And she says nothing in response to that. She's just kind of accepting that he's kind of showing her this disrespect. And he says, you say the kingdom is here. Look outside you. There's still wars. There's still poverty. There's still inequality. People are suffering out there. There's no new world. And she says, it won't come by conflict. It won't come by bloodshed. Does that make you feel better carrying that anger around? How does that feel?
Yeah.
Carrying that around, like, does it solve the problems, or does it really just poison your heart and take you away from people?
Yeah.
She says the kingdom is within us. Mm. It's within us to be heaven on earth.
Right.
To show love in the way that Jesus showed, to really care for people in the way that Jesus cared for people,
mm-hmm.
to be with people, to help. And I was so moved when I saw that the first time. I cried.
Yeah.
The next day I told my partner, I was like, you have to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
So her and I watch it. I cried again at the same part. It's mm-hmm. so beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I think that is an interesting message. Even if you don't believe in a God or whatever your cosmology is, that still rings true, that the kingdom of heaven is within us. It's right. Our job to make the world a better place. If you got anger and you got frustration, I'm not saying you don't feel that,
mm-hmm.
but don't harbor resentment. Try your best to forgive. This is the simple and very profound encouragement to love, to go out there and do your best in love. It sounds really cheesy, but this movie makes it not that way.
Well, yeah, I think the beauty of the film is that it shows you the hardship that it takes to love, right? At least, as you said, you know, this is very much a feminist film, and it's not in the sense of like, oh, hurrah, women are the best. Women, you know, deserve equal pay. And, you know, I'm not trying to diminish those
they
sentiments.
They are the best. They do deserve equal pay.
Absolutely. And more so than what they get. But I'm not trying to diminish that. I'm just saying this film takes a different approach to what you would think would be a feminist film.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's a good place to like start and dive into.
Right.
The opening scene that really kind of shook me, the first time we really see a woman, first off, we open up with them walking through the field, already doing work.
Yeah.
They're pulling things behind them.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned the very unique zoom that happens.
Oh, we'll get right? to the zooms. We'll get to the zooms later. But
okay, sure, yeah. Anyways, it's a unique presentation mm-hmm. of these women and their work. The women are stopped from their work to go into a little hut where a woman is birthing. She's giving life. So the first very visceral introduction to a woman that we get in this context is the hardship and the giving of life. I wrote down, the first thing I thought of was that we see them as the carriers of the burden of life. The burden being that it is painful to bring life into this world. It is excruciating. And I think in the context of that scene, it's a very young woman,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
it is almost like that is her lot in life at a very early age.
Yeah.
And that's what she's made for.
And probably a lot of people, their life expectancy is until childbirth.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, so, this is like 2020 years ago.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it feels like such a removed time to reflect and think about, but it still feels very, when you watch that scene,
yeah,
a birthing in a hut, it feels very, I don't even know if this is the right word, or I'm just wanting to use it because it sounds cool, but prurient. Does that make sense?
I don't know what that means.
I want to Google it, but anyways, it seems very apt, yeah. Right? So just, you know, getting into like a personal level, I've lived with women for the majority of my life, with my mother, my sister, and even other members of the family, friends of the family that were women. And I felt like I've been surrounded in this. So when I saw that, I was like, wow, like that is a very perfect crystallization of what it's like to carry the burden of life, you know, to be the ones that's like, no, we are the bearers of life,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it was very visceral.
Yeah. And it shows in a visceral, visual way, that act of love, that loving is messy and loving is difficult.
Right.
Loving is sometimes life threatening, as is seen in a couple of scenes later in the film. One thing I wanted to say about that scene is Mary Magdalene is specifically called in to help nurse, be a midwife for this young, very, very young woman who is giving birth. And so Mary lies down across from her, and she's lying with her, and she's got her face in her hands, and she's comforting her, and she's giving her strength and giving her comfort. And finally, this baby is out, and she's just there for the joy too. And it's a beautifully composed shot where Rooney Mara's head is in close up, and it's sideways like this because she's lying down, and then it cuts to the young woman who's like this. And it's also in close-up, and you get to see, we're looking at it now, you get to see the pain and the joy.
The sweat.
And it's paralleled later in the film. Once Mary becomes a follower of Jesus, once she's joined the crew, there's a famous scene for all you Bible heads out there where Jesus brings a man back from the dead. This man, Lazarus, has died. And his family calls Jesus this miracle worker. How, like, can you bring him back to health? He's clear. He's already gone. Hope is lost or being lost. Jesus lies next to him, and it's framed in much the same way. And it's a close-up. The close-up holds on Jesus because there's not, you don't get much reaction shot from a dead guy. But Jesus... He touches him, and you see the tenderness, the love on Jesus' face. And the man breathes back to life, and you see also the toll that it takes out of Jesus. He then falls back exhausted mm-hmm. from this act. You don't know why, because it's this crazy, miraculous act. But that, too, shows the sacrifice that love is to care for a soul, to nurse it.
Right.
Is a... It ain't free.
Yeah, thinking like when you bring attention to that visual parallel, it is a very like simple yet beautiful cinematic way to just say Mary is in line mm-hmm. with Christ.
She
right?
gets it.
She gets it. She's in tune with yeah. that heart.
Yeah.
You know, we'll kind of like unpack that a little bit as we go on, but I think that's so crucial to the crux of the film is that like, hey, this like. As the men view her in the film, this weaker vessel, this like, you know, again, as you said, Peter.
Yeah.
Peter that says to her, you know, like, why would Jesus speak to you?
Yeah.
You know, that struck me because it's not very like it doesn't beat you over the head. You know, it's yeah. very subtle in watching the daily struggle of these women and their work and their birthing and the difficulty of their lives in this context, mm-hmm. you really sit in that, like how difficult it is
yeah.
for a man to conceive of like, oh, you're connecting with God, but yeah. I'm not,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, these women who didn't have personhood, there's even a scene where she's praying in the church, she's having a crisis because she's supposed to marry this guy she doesn't love. The priest comes to her and says, how can I help you? She's just so distressed. And later in the scene, her father says in anger, you pray with the women when you during the women's hour, mm-hmm. you pray with us at church. You don't just get to go to the temple whenever the hell you want yeah. and pray whenever you want. We found a good man for you. What's the problem?
Mm, yeah.
And she's just trying to be an independent person. She's
yeah.
She's found the light and she wants to go for it. And there's a big conflict because of that.
Yeah, I think the other side of looking at that, you know, just saying that this is a feminist film, I think it has its own power, you know, given once you walk through all of these scenes with Mary. But on the other side of that, like, you know, myself being a man, and actually I kind of wanted to like do a little pit stop here and talk about this. Like, you know, us two as males watching this, which, you know, is quite well-crafted through the eyes of a woman, mm-hmm. although I think the director and the cinematographer are males.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about like the writing. And
it was written by two women.
Oh, it was written by two women. Perfect. Like that to me is unique, is how it is in the able to embody the journey of a woman mm-hmm. in this context, but still be able to connect to, like, say, two guys that, you know, in some form, maybe not directly as the man in the film, but in some form have these trappings of a male, of a man that thinks this way, of a man that acts this way. I don't know, like, well, I guess what I wanted to ask, like, do we have any right speaking about this film?
First of all, how dare you?
Yeah, there's so much to be learned from this film. I love her character. I mean, it's a great underdog story because Mary is living in this extremely patriarchal world. Mm-hmm. It's oppressive in so many ways. I mean, she's loved by her family and she, you know, it's, she's not enslaved explicitly, but there's many ways that she's held down as women were then and have been for, you know, centuries. But mm-hmm. That makes it such a great underdog story because she has her own perspective. She has her own opinion and she's able to like fight for what she thinks is right without sacrificing her like softness, her kindness, mm-hmm. her tenderness. That is the way forward. That's what I found so beautiful about this movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, of course, Peter, of course he would pick her. She mm-hmm. gets it. You know, she knows that the kingdom of heaven won't come by conflict because she's, you know, that first scene, we see her, she cares for somebody in their time of pain. That's the kingdom.
Right.
That,
definitely.
Yeah. I thought that was beautiful. And to that point of her getting it, I don't know if it's mentioned in the Bible, but like the current Pope, Pope Francis in 2016, I think, and it's shown at the end of the film, it's on this title card. He called her the Apostle of the Apostles because she was the one who was the closest witness. She's really got it. She's the one who was there with him in his suffering. She was there, the one who was there with him at the foot of the cross, and she was the one who that he revealed himself to at the end. Yeah, she's a special lady.
Yeah, I think I bring up the question to ask because, you know, like I think in many different ways, in many different contexts in film, we've heard, oh, this person can't portray this because she's not either of that ethnicity or that background or she's a woman. Or, you know, like there's a bunch of different
like Gal Gadot playing Cleopatra. Some people were upset about that.
Sure, sure. Yes, like there's different examples of that. And I always hate those discussions because to me, cinema is a way to like be empathetic, to understand. And, you know, in an understanding that this film was directed by a male and shot by males, well, at least the artistic direction by it. To me, it's like that is a call and a hunger to understand. Mm-hmm. You know, it is why I like film,
yeah.
Why I pursue it, and why I think that it is like the access way to me unlocking whatever love looks like in my life.
Yeah.
Right. And I love that because, you know, seeing a film like this is really encouraging in that respect.
Yes.
Being like, hey, we can understand a woman's plight. We can understand because we can sit down and watch this film and then walk this journey with her.
Yeah.
And be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, at the end of the film, it really hit me. I was like, man, men are so stupid, you know, because you get Peter just be like all the men, all the apostles are just sitting around mechanizing how the kingdom of God is to come. Mm. And all they're really talking about is like by force. Mm. Oh no, the temple has to fall. Oh, these many people have to be, you know, like hurt or wrangled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's always very like militant.
Yeah,
almost.
They're using the same legalistic arguments that the prophecies or whatever, the religious leaders were using. They're
right,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you still don't get it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And I only bring it up to ask, like, to me it was a big, It was a beautiful insight to say, hey, I can make films like this. Actually, a lot of my collaborators in making short films and music videos have been women.
Yeah.
You know, and oftentimes I thought to myself, should they be working with the women to like help them bring their ideas across? But for me, it's a great insight to say, no, I want to partner on this project.
Yeah.
so that I can understand what you want to express better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't want to just be like, well, I'm a male. I have to go shoot male things. Yeah. Like, that interests me as well. But, like, I love this idea of tackling a feminist perspective through the eyes, well, through the hands maybe of a male,
yeah.
right? Through the work, through the direction and the art direction of a male.
Yeah. I don't think you should ever listen to anybody who says you can't tell a certain story.
Mm.
I think that the criticisms of appropriation are fair, though. Chief among them, that you might get it wrong. If you make a movie from a perspective that's wildly different from your own, and you don't, like, consult people who have had that lived experience or whatever, you could get it wrong. But, like, there's no reason that you shouldn't tell a story about, you know, a little black girl living in Ghana if it's a good story. And if you try to honor it and do justice to the truth of it, I mean, that's the you touched on this earlier, that the whole power of film is that it puts you into other people's shoes.
Yeah,
the power and the fun, I might add. You get to, like, be in space. You get to be in the Bible times. You get to be in Sherwood Forest. You get to be everywhere. It's so much fun. And it's also a much more attractive way of exploring new philosophies, new perspectives, than to get somebody to tell you, like, in a classic documentary, the documentary that we just finished. We talked about this at our Q&A at the last screening, how we wanted to avoid having too many, like, expert voices or narration that was saying, oh, like, garbage is a really big problem, so, like, think about that, and, you know. Or just show it and show it beautifully. And I think it's like the movies make other perspectives so attractive. You can't help. You embody this other character for a while.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to, like, take us to theoretical offshoots. I kind of want to bring us back to some of the moments in the film. And actually, what's on screen right now is a moment where I think it's meant to totally feel for Mary. She's woken up in the middle of the night, brought out by her brothers and her father, and it's at night. It's, you know, lit by fire, and they bring her out to the waterside, and they start almost trying to exorcise some sort of demon from her.
Mm-hmm.
There's a priest out in the water, and he's chanting, and, you know, and her own
leave her.
Right. And her own brother is, like, basically drowning her, and she's calling out his name, and, you know, it doesn't seem like there's any semblance of what they consider a demon, but they are convinced that this act is what they need to do to rid her of what seems to be her independence.
Yeah, she's too independent. She doesn't want to marry this perfectly nice guy.
That's right.
She runs off. She wants to join this new cult.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely got something wrong upstairs.
Exactly. And it's shown in such a, you know, you can't help but be exhausted after seeing that.
Yeah.
Seeing poor Rooney flop around. And actually, as we're watching them just, like, lay her down, there's this, like, it looks like the life is just sucked from her.
She's catatonic.
Yeah, and she's like, there's something beyond just what happened to my body here. You know,
yeah,
they
disrespected my soul.
Exactly. They don't trust her soul, her very being. She even says, she's like, if there was a demon in me, it's not out.
Yeah, she's like, you know? I wish there was a demon in me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just such a poignant moment to that sentiment of, like, if there is something wrong in women, in the way we look at women or perceive them, you know, it can't be like forced out, you know, it can't be disregarded as such. Right.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't notice this. It's a woman who comes and swathes her and puts her in blankets and comforts her. It's just very touching.
The ancient emotional care of women.
Yeah.
Emotional labor.
And I mean, it begs the question, like, obviously the males are kind of painted as more of like a callous, stern, do the right thing perspective. And yes, they show moments of tenderness. Like, I mean, her own father, you know, regrets having put her through that and is trying to, like, you know, snuggle up beside her during the evening. But, like, it begs the question of, like, you know, can men express that same care?
And then Jesus comes in and does it. He beautifully embodies both this, like, rallying cry, this let's go.
That's right.
He's, you know, embodies these kind of the male ideals that are embodied by Mary's father and brothers, and also this beautiful tenderness. And
that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And Joaquin Phoenix does, unsurprisingly, so well.
Yeah, we had talked
to you watch him, and I'm like, that's Joaquin Phoenix. I'm not lost.
Yeah.
Because his face, it's just his face. It's Joaquin Phoenix's face.
It is.
But his eyes are so kind, and there's such depth there.
Yeah, even though there's a lot of pain, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, for me, watching that first scene when you hear Joaquin speak, and of course he's, you know, playing Jesus, it's tough. Like, your mind has to get over that, like...
Yeah.
Oh, this is Joaquin acting. But then, like, I think the camera work and how long the shots are on him really give you time to, like, move past that.
Yeah.
And you kind of are like, oh, okay, there is a genuine thread. There's a genuine emotion here.
That's a good point in general about celebrity actors, that sometimes if there's an actor that's playing a role, being lost in a role, that's an interesting strategy. Just holding on them makes you sort of have to get over it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's Brad Pitt.
That's right.
Well,
yeah.
Now what?
We shot, just this past week, we shot an episode on episode 7 about experimental film.
Yeah.
We had a bit of a discussion about, like, watching really weird things for a long time, yeah. Right? And how it changes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, that was a different context. And very different subjects, but I think it's used beautifully here. If you do watch that scene, you spend so much time on Joaquin's face, and you're looking at his eyes. I can't stop looking at wrinkles. This is the bags under the eyes. It's not just the texture of his life, you know? It's like, whoa. Okay, the character is speaking now, you know? With enough time spent there, you're like, oh, okay, I actually care about what you're saying. And then the cuts that you get are to Mary Magdalene, you know? And she looks, and, you know, there's a bit of a smile there. And actually, I wrote this down too. When you cut back to Mary, she's in between two men.
Yeah.
And she's framed as such, foreground, background. She's still sandwiched. She's still stuck.
She's hidden among them.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. This is a man's world.
Very brilliantly just composed. Yeah. You know, but Jesus is on his own.
Yeah. That's one thing that I adored about this movie, is that there are a lot of these shots are moving, and a lot of them have this handheld feel. But watching it a second time and now a third time, you see how perfectly composed they all are, how much precision there is in every one of these shots. Mm-hmm. Appreciating it again, you can see that this must have been very carefully choreographed. And some of it just still strikes me as magic, like the wind in this scene where there's a Judea or Magdala is coming to the water to be baptized by this new Messiah.
Right.
There's an intense wind, and wow. I was watching that the first time I was like, did they have a wind machine? It's
right.
It's so beautiful. Was that something that they were lamenting on set? Like.
Yeah.
Was this a problem? Because it's so gorgeous in that scene. And I did that. My point is just that it looks like it's handheld so much of the time. And that is so effective for just putting you in this world. It's so good at that. We were talking about it a little bit before we recorded. I'm always completely in this world. And they don't have that many set pieces. And when they do, they're super textural. You can see the texture of this clay and just the way the light plays on it, the texture of the sand, the texture of the cloth. And
and
so much of this production design is sold through these costumes, through the robes that they wear, just the way that they're perfectly tattered. It's I'm so believably in this world. And maybe this could be a good segue to talking about the costume design.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, before you go into that,
yeah,
I just wanted to talk on the scene you were talking about where Mary is walking out to see, it's Peter, right?
Peter's the one doing the baptizing.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. So Peter baptizing all of these people. This is kind of like, actually, I want to pause right there. Whoops. Actually, in another film that I want to do for 0.5, so this is a bit of a sneak peek, is A Place in the Sun. It's a black and white film, but something I didn't know a lot about going into it, but something that caught me completely off guard was the use of tracking shots. And why it caught me off is not that it's like beautiful and, you know, stunning and like picturesque. It's because it actually speaks to the change in character. And I just wanted to draw attention to this scene where Mary starts walking out to the ocean side to see these people be baptized, is because the first shot we see of her, it's a tracking shot, yeah, and we're following her very steadily. So it is a contrast to what we've seen before with the slight shake, you know, the welcome pose shot. But we're following her. But what's interesting is that, like, the camera, she is leading the camera. You know, her movement is what's dictating what the camera is following. I mean, in many ways, it's saying outright, she is starting to make her own decision. Mm-hmm. She wants to go out there to see for herself.
Right.
Right. And as we cut back, and then what, I didn't even notice this. We cut to another shot. It's a shroud of women, all women, and they're stationary.
And they all look the same. They all look the same.
Yeah. They're looking on as well with the same amazement, but only one woman is stepping forward. And
among
we
the
get,
men, through the men.
We get the movement thus.
Right.
And I just found like those simple little decisions
contrasting
to track
her with the... Look, right. Right now, there's a shot of her kind of looking, breaking into the crowd of men who are all looking upon Jesus as he performs a miracle. She's pushing her way into the crowd gently. You're right. This like speaks so much to her character.
Right. And you know what? It's subtle. It's implicit, but it's there.
Yeah.
You know, it actually foreshadows what you see.
Right. Yeah. The only thing that I wanted to say about costume design was, again, that point about the texture, that the texture of the surfaces in this film are what really put you in this world. It doesn't rely on these big set pieces. There are, of course, some wide shots of big set pieces.
Yeah.
But it's really just the texture. You're in this really human world. You're with these old fabrics, and you can see how people's skin is dirty in an old way.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have soap. Mm-hmm. There are just these soft human ways that this movie is really visceral.
That's a good point. I wanted to pause you there. Like, what, imagine like this crowd, the scene of this crowd of people baptizing, gathering around Christ. Like, they would all stink.
A lot.
They would be horribly messy and smelly.
Stench would be normal.
Right, exactly. It's kind of wild to think about.
Same with sleeping. And they have some shots of sleeping in this movie, and people are just sleeping on the floor.
Right.
I'm like, look at us right now. We're kings. We're living like kings. We're in these plush recliners that recline at the flick of a button. Like, yeah, compared to what people have had to deal with for, you know, most of human history, sleeping in their robes and clothes, like having a your day wear double as your bed.
yeah exactly.
Yeah,
it's wild. But I love actually, when you first brought that up, I hadn't noticed the textures of the clothing, of their garb. It is just storytelling,
you know?
It tells you everything,
yeah,
in a very subtle yet beautiful way. I just noticed on the scene where she's going to the baptisms, her fringe around the scarf of her head, very frayed, very tattered.
Yeah.
And then when I was fast forwarding to the next scene, it's refined.
Ah.
It's like, it's stitched. Huh. You can actually see that seam. I don't even know what that really is bringing out, but that change feels so important.
Yeah, yeah. Another note about the garb is one that we've talked about before just in conversation, but Judas's, I was struck by his robes. Yeah. Most of their robes, they're these earth tones, you know, nothing darker than brown, nothing lighter than cream.
Yeah.
But Judas, you know, famously the betrayer of Christ, who is in this movie really given good justification for his ultimate action that has, you know, led people to condemn him ever since. His robes are filled with holes. Mm-hmm. Not, I mean, here there are some holes in his normal garb, but his his main robe is, the pattern is intentionally holy. You know, it has holes all over it. And I was like, why is his different? There you can see it there.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, and this is maybe a hokey interpretation, but it rang true for me, that he's the one with holes in his heart. He's the one where he leaks out to the Romans. Oh, the Messiah is here. Here he is. He's also the one who's kind of coming from the place of most pain, as we see in the scene where he bonds with Mary. He's an acceptor of Mary. We sympathize with him right away.
Right.
We see him, and we hear that his wife and child were murdered by Roman soldiers who came after a bad harvest and still demanded a huge cut.
Right.
This terrible brutality, terrible police violence, took his wife and child, and now he has somebody he really believes in, this Jesus Christ, who is promising the kingdom of heaven, and we will be with them once more.
He wants
that more than anything. And in the meantime, he's found this family of disciples and this friend, and I guess so, his father figure in Jesus. And he just has, I mean, they've unearthed gospels written by Mary Magdalene. I don't know if it's actually written by her, or the Gospel of Thomas. And there's a Gospel of Judas. And in that gospel, he basically talks about, this was my role. This was the sacrifice that I had to make for the good of the world. Because of my betrayal, I expedited this whole kingdom on earth, this whole saving of humanity thing.
Yeah.
It was a pretty important role.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I mean, yeah, as the film portrays him, you definitely feel for him, right? You know, he's fighting for this family. He wants the resurrection so that he can be with his family again. You know, it's an honest and honorable charge. But, you know, again, I think to the point of the film again, it's still like, there's still his, let's call it his maleness that he can't get over, right? He's like, oh, but it has to happen this way. You know, it has to happen here. And I think later on in the film, we actually get that, where he says something outright, like, oh no, it has to, like the temple has to split or something along those lines. And you can really see, like, yes, that kind of, that fracture in his character and his person of like wanting this good thing and being so sold for it, but then feeling so betrayed when it doesn't happen the way it is.
Yeah, it's like, come on, Jesus, just do it already. Like, why are you sitting on this?
That's right.
Are you scared? And Jesus, who like maybe knows the future, just kind of looks sad at Judas, like, oh, you still don't get it, man. Like, And I don't know if in that moment Jesus doesn't have the heart to tell him. He's like, oh, you're not going to see your family again, maybe when you die. But it's better. It's the best that Jesus remains silent.
Oh, yeah.
And just gives him love in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's a curious notion. That is the, you know, how much did Christ himself know?
Right.
I think it's a quandary to think about his manhood as well as his, you know, divine nature of being the Son of God. And, you know, it's such a crazy thing. It's like, yeah, did he know about all of this before? Like, he even says, like, you will, I don't know if it's a line in the film, but in the Bible, he's like, you know, you're going to betray me before like three crows or three chickens.
Right. He says to Peter, you will deny me three times before. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mean, maybe that's like insight from the Father at some point, but there is this very unique mystery of like, how much does he know?
Right.
I'm inclined to believe, not only through the portrayal of this film, but through my own studies of the Bible and, you know, musings of my own, that we take for granted how human he was. And I say that to say that I think he was just like us.
Yeah, he's shown as a bit, maybe even scared.
That's right.
Of the suffering of death.
That's right. I mean, he says there's that clear line, like, you know, please, Father, take this suffering if I don't have to go through it.
Yeah.
Right? He was like, hey, this really sucks.
Yeah.
I need a way out. And that's such a natural human response. I mean, how many times in our own lives, through our own quandaries and our own, you know, crap that we go through, are we like, wow, this sucks. Someone please take this away.
Yep.
You know, it's such a male thing. And so I think whatever insight or foresight he may have had to say, see the future, I don't think he had access to that. You know, I think he had to, like, his example is that he had to take such diligence in prayer and in fasting and in living the life to be connected with God, the Father, but it was still so difficult, you know? He still had such doubt and pain. Yeah. And I don't know, I think Joaquin's portrayal of that is quite apt, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Joaquin Phoenix does wounded, caring, tender soul so well, because I think he's just that. And you made a comment about, like, you see his face and you see his wrinkles and he's an imperfect person, and and that's so beautiful and refreshing and important to reflect on, as compared to, say, like, I don't know, like classic paintings of Jesus in this really idealized, also white, like, form, or even Jim Caviezel's portrayal in The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
I don't want to disparage that movie, but I didn't love it, and part of the reason is because he's just so beautiful.
Ah, I see. Interesting. And
they also, like, really glorify this. It's also, it seems like sadistic, kind of.
Sure.
Glorifying this suffering that he did this for you, but they don't really have any of that here. Like, they do show his pain, but they don't milk it. You know.
Right.
They don't. Yeah. You know, it's the big movie. It's a big movie about Jesus, but the scene of the cross is not the climax.
That's right.
It's just a scene. They don't even really hold on the gore part of it. They hold on his face, as, you know, he's in pain and the light is leaving his eyes. I just like love this portrayal.
Yeah, and an interesting note to that respect is, I think like, I'm not sure if this is accurate and maybe can be fact checked, but I think, like, historically, like, Jesus was about the age of 32 at the time of, like, setting out with the apostles to go and do all the work. So, you know, in the context of us watching this film, he should be around there, like 32, 33, something like that. Yeah. Well, actually, I see it would have only happened in the span of 1 year, but I don't know. Whatever. I don't know the timelines. But, you know, just to, like, look at Joaquin's face and be like, whoa. You know, like, if we're to take, okay, he was 32, and we're take Joaquin's portrayal.
He's 43, like, in this movie, by the way.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's so different, but, like, I think it's so fitting, because you look at Joaquin's face and you're like, wow. There is, like, age and pain.
World weary.
And suffering there. And I think it's apt. You know, like, I think if we in 2020 were to see what Christ had gone through, like, during that time, he would be just as aged. Maybe if not more, because of social media. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He wouldn't be the six-pack Jesus. I mean, that would seem like a waste of time probably to him.
Yeah.
I loved that. Yeah, just how human Joaquin looks.
Right. But yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot about Jesus's portrayal here through Joaquin, and not to, like, take away from that, but I think the beauty of the film is that those moments are presented so that we can get Mary's perspective on it.
Yeah.
So that we can get her interaction and what she's going through. Again, the crucifixion scene is actually quite short.
Yeah.
And part of me was like, I'm kind of glad. No, like, I didn't want to, like, sit here and endure that and go through this, like, crazy separate emotional journey, when really it's like we're meant to be with Mary.
Right. And even in that film, like, that ultimate shot is looking up at him. It's like from her perspective, or in her perspective, like the whole time. I don't know if there's even a scene at all where she's not in it. There may be a sidebar with a couple of men, but she's always there. Like this is her her movie for sure.
Yeah, the moments that come to mind that she's not there are like kind of establishing shots. Mm. They're a little wider.
Yeah.
So it's like, to me, it's just saying it's like, oh, there's this scene coming in. This is what's happening, for instance, when we go to the seaside baptisms.
Yeah.
Or even when they get to the temple. You know, we see this wide vantage point.
Yeah.
But now we're going to go into this perspective.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of always to ground ourselves, but remind ourselves through which eyes we're looking through.
Right. It's a very intimate movie.
Right.
You always feel like you're close to her and close to all of the characters. Like even this scene where Jesus is talking to this group of women, it's all like framed. Well, it's just, it's, you're just there. That's kind of a dumb point because I guess all movies do that, but.
Well, but I mean, there is a difference, right? I think the shot choice, I mean, look at how much real estate each character is taking.
Yeah.
You know, it is quite, like we're very close on some.
Yeah.
Like Jesus is like a medium close up. It's not particularly taking up too much. But if you just notice previously, we were very close on Judas. We're very close on the woman questioning him.
Yeah. And everything in the background is completely out of focus. And we're just right, super focused on the people, the people, right. the people. Do you mind if I shift into the talk about the Zoom?
Oh yeah, please.
So the movie opens with this incredible shot that it is hard to appreciate at first because it's panning across this landscape and there are some titles on screen giving you context for where we are. Judea, 33 CE. You know, the people are waiting for this Messiah. They're talking about how horrible the Roman rule has been. We pan across this gorgeous landscape and we zoom in to this patch of land near the water and we zoom for a very long time as these titles play out. And this zoom is so incredibly long, but it ends on these two figures dragging a net down a path. And then it immediately cuts and we're with Mary and her sister doing work before she's called to help with his childbirth. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how they did that, how they started so wide and then very, very, very slowly zoomed for a really long time. And then it ends on these two moving figures and they are perfectly centered in where this shot ended up.
It kind of feels like time travel.
Yeah.
You know, from our perspective here in the present day.
Yeah, good point.
To there, right?
You're going in.
You're going in slowly. Yeah. Your mind has to change a bit. Let's take this slow, but let's do this nice, continuous, long zoom.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And there's a second zoom that happens late in the film, and I'm actually not going to spoil what it reveals because I don't need to, and because it's just to watch the movie, it's amazing. But another very, very slow zoom kind of after the climax of the movie and we're looking at this landscape and it zooms very slowly and reveals what has been at the center the whole time. You know, if you watch that again, you see it. It's small, but it's there. It's always been there. Right. And we zoom in and it's this big reveal once you realize, once your mind is able to like see what it is and register what it means, it's a big reveal, but right. It's this slow zoom. Oh
yeah. Brilliant. I mean, again, like, yeah, taking the time to focus in on that one thing, like focus in on what matters, right?
Yeah.
It's that one little spot.
Yeah.
Very, very smart mechanism.
Yeah. And slowly, subtly, it will reveal itself to you. You will get its power.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be super explicit and direct.
Yeah. That's what I super loved. Like the techniques there, they're subtle, they're there, but they're not, you know, in your face. They're not, you know, I think that maybe draws an interesting comparison to biblical films of old where there were these gigantic, lavish, you know, epics.
Yeah.
That needed to be, you know, studio, huge budget, Charlton
yeah.
Heston,
yeah.
fucking parting the oceans. You know, yeah. my mom loves Charlton Heston to this day because of that.
yeah.
Right? Like, but this is like not that. It's grounded. It's like yeah. approachable. Uh-huh. It's textured, as you say. It's very, very humane.
Yeah.
It doesn't disparage you for not believing in any of it.
No, we're there. Right? Everybody's fallible. Even Jesus seems sort of,
that's right.
maybe not fallible, but like human. He's but scared. Yeah. You know?
That's right. Susceptible. It helps you identify, you know, yeah. be like, oh yeah, I felt similar things. You
right.
know? I've been there. I've been in that emotion. What, you know, very, very unique because I think, that's a quandary of mine is not only just about the Bible, but about like old texts. You know, how do you insert yourself into that? How do you identify with that?
Yeah. And this how do you portray them as a creator of a work of art like this? Right. How do you portray them in a way that is, I don't know, real? Because like it's, you like you mentioned with Charlton Heston, there are these massive aggrandized portraits of these epic people
yeah.
who, you know, like death sanctifies people, turns people into saints.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just have these sacred Bible myths about them, and
yeah,
it's almost sacrilegious to show people as just human beings.
I know, yeah, it's so true. I like to draw the attention to another really powerful biblical film by Scorsese, The Last Temptation of Christ. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't.
Oh my good God! So it's on the surface, it feels like what you would consider to be like a standard biblical representation, sorry, cinematic representation of the Bible, right? You're watching it, you're going through it, and oh, I wish you would see it, and I wish viewers and listeners would also watch it. I don't want to spoil anything, but at the very end, you basically get a very human perspective of Christ. And now, I won't spoil it because it's worth watching, and the effect there is for a reason, but I remember being kind of a young, devout Christian watching this, being like, oh, this has been a fairly faithful telling the whole time. And then at the end, when you get that shift of like, it's almost like at the end of like a, not a whodunit, but like a mystery movie where it's like, oh, there's alternate endings and they show you the possibility of them. It's something along those lines. And some people think it's quite sacrilegious to depict Christ in these ways. But by you having seen that, you get a better sense of his humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a better, deeper understanding and respect for that. He's not just this floating saint that knows it all.
Yeah.
You know, he is us who doesn't know what the fuck we're doing, but goes out of his way enough to connect with God still.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that to me rang so huge. And again, I get semblances of that in here. And it's just why I'm attracted to so much of the nuance and imagery, because I feel like it's there too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
You got to watch that film though. Scorsese.
Yeah, we'll
do. One of Scorsese's best.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe plays Jesus, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he does it pretty brilliantly.
Let's talk a little bit about the personnel behind this movie. So this movie is from 2018. It's directed by Garth Davis. It's basically his second big movie after doing Lion. It is the last film of two major players. One of them being Johan Johansson, who is the composer, a brilliant composer, Icelandic maybe? I'm not sure. That sounds like a Scandinavian.
Maybe Swedish?
Maybe Swedish, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Who's amazing and has done amazing work with the films of Denis Villeneuve, Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Mandy. He did The Theory of Everything, won a Golden Globe for that. It was also, he was a brilliant, brilliant composer. Made a couple of films in his own right. Also the last film of now defamed producer Harvey Weinstein is the last project that he was attached to, which is in my mind, maybe why this movie wasn't a bigger deal, because
right.
how is this movie not a bigger deal? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, two interesting points. I mean, it kind of even speaks to the story itself that even though these men, well, at least to the Weinstein point in particular, you know, even though, you know, Christ saw these apostles as like imperfect, maybe even kind of misguided in their own way, individuals, but he was still going to trust them enough to build what he would call his church and the kingdom of God on, right? And, you know, not at all to say, oh, Weinstein's an apostle in that same
just
vein.
Just a flawed guy.
Yeah. And not to excuse any of the, but like, nonetheless, like, even in spite of such travesty and misled as an individual, can still, like, something as beautiful as the kingdom of God be built on, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know, like, I'm not trying to say anything about Weinstein and what happened there. I'm not trying to imply at all that that's how the kingdom of God's being built our current modern age.
But even an absolute monster can help get a beautiful movie like this.
Right. I mean, hey, maybe he's their Judas.
I mean, Good Will Hunting remains one of my favorite movies. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, obviously a mixed way to feel about that, right? I don't know. It's an interesting notion, but yeah, maybe the Johan Johansson connection is better.
Yeah, let's go with that. I should end it on that one.
No, but I think it's very unique, because that's kind of my own perspective, is like looking back on these biblical stories, there are these characters that are unsavory, that are despicable, that done things that you would not align yourself with, a Harvey Weinstein. Yet still they perform an integral part to, you know, not only the story of Christ, but the story of humanity at that time, and thus what we are now, you know? Yeah. I can't help but think that it's just like, it's valuable to look at and understand the gritty, ugly parts of life, but also to hold that in balance with the beauty. Yeah. And that's what I can respect out of this film, you know? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we see a character like that in Judas. We even see some moments like that in other apostles as well. But it gives me hope to be like, hey, although the portrait of our humanity is kind of gross and ugly, there's still the capacity to love and care for each other. And, you know, and that's ultimately within each one of us.
Yeah.
You know, that I thought was like a beautiful way to depict that and to remind myself of that.
Yeah. In so much of this movie, the characters are shown embedded in their greater community. There's so many scenes of throngs of people. You know, there's plenty of quiet scenes too with just the disciples or a couple with just Mary and Jesus or whatever. But you're really embedded in this this community, these communities in Judea at this time, 33 CE. There are, however, the film is bookended by these gorgeous sequences in which the character is completely alone.
Wow.
In the first, and they are essentially the same, although one important thing is done in the second one. So the beginning of the film, Mary is floating in water. She's talking about the kingdom of heaven, how it came as a mustard seed. And how it grows and grows, and it's this beautiful Malikian poetry taken from the Bible. And she's floating there in this water, and it's just this gradient of blue behind her. Sometimes you see the rocks. It looks like she's drowning.
Yeah.
And then the movie starts. In the end of the film, once all is said and done, once Jesus has died and risen, and the big message, the big call has been made that the kingdom is within, we go back again, our hearts totally uplifted by this movie, tears in our eyes, and we see the same sequence. Not exactly the same, because this movie never repeats a shot. But again, we are with her alone in the water. But we think of it totally differently now. Now this water could be her in her own psyche. Now is it a callback to the beginning? And as the sequence plays out, it seems like she's moving up. And in the distance, you can almost make out people.
Yeah.
And suddenly this being in water, which she is revealed to Jesus later in the middle of the movie, was a game that she used to play with her brothers to see who could hold their breath the longest. And, you know, this experience of weightlessness and that's all very cool. And so as we see it at first, we're like, well, maybe this is just that again. Maybe this is a flashback. Mm-hmm. But then she ascends instead of sinks. And she moves towards this light that's at the surface, and there are people there. And so the allusion to heaven, her ascending to heaven, realizing that the kingdom of heaven, like practically realizing that the kingdom of heaven is among us.
Yeah.
It's just told so gorgeously in a purely visual way.
Yeah.
In a way that you completely directly get that metaphor.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you what it is. It just shows you.
That's right. Yeah. And as I watched that, I not only was like arrested by the beauty and by like how simple and how direct it was, like, to me, you know, I couldn't help but think about my own life and be like, wow, what in my own experience has made me feel this way? You know, like what in my own experience of following Christianity, of considering myself a Christian, of trying to seek God in many ways, of trying to like love others, I'm like, I'll just be honest with you, Andy, like I felt like I had missed the mark for so long, you know, even though I would consider myself a Christian, I think I try to like live the right way and do the right things. And not to say that any of that was wrong, but to like, on this really deeply personal level, is like, wow, as those apostles in the film, I felt like I've missed the mark in some way, you know? And I'm like, what a beautiful reminder of how to love through this journey of Mary,
right?
You know? And I honestly, that this like this wave of thoughts and emotion came over me, and I was like, wow, I've had like Marys around me all my life. You know, I've had my mother, my sister, my, you know, distant friends. And I've had this reminder of like how to love, to put it very simply. Mm-hmm. But I'd never let that hit me in a personal way. Mm. And I was like, whoa. I wouldn't say it like revealed to me exactly how, but I knew it was like a personal message to be like, how do you love?
Yes.
How is your life exemplary of this type of love?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're talking a lot about how the movie makes that message. And it does make it in more explicit ways, like in Mary's talk with Peter, where she's saying to him, like, the king, it's not out there. You don't fight for it. It's inside of you. Yeah. It's like an attitude. It's an attitude, kind of.
Yeah.
But it also just, like we just said, shows it in the language of cinema, and it feels as direct as saying it, you know, hearing it in dialogue.
Yeah.
It feels as direct to see that image at the end where she's ascending into community. And that when you just said you felt you'd missed the mark, I think it was Dante just said this to me a couple of days ago, that the word sin, the origin of it, means to miss the mark. Yeah. It's not this binary, like good or bad, hell or heaven, black and white thing. Mm-hmm. It's like you're off.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think that now we're getting into theology, but but I think that like the idea of sin like takes us away from God, whatever God means for you. Like, and I think, and as this movie kind of equates God with the everything, the network that we're a part of, the community that we're a part of, the world that we're a part of, to be a good, loving, godly person, you have to be in that. You participate. You get involved.
That's right.
You don't worry about being impressed or not. You be involved.
Right.
And so there's extra meaning to her being alone, floating in this water. Is she dying? Is she drowning? She's rising up to these people. Like when I tell somebody a lie, I'm separating myself from them.
Right.
And there's this idea that like hell is really just ultimate separation from God. You're totally separate. If I were to steal from you, I'm separating myself from you. I mean, I guess it would be another lie, but conversely, to be really honest and open with people, as this movie shows, is messy.
It is messy indeed.
But it's everything.
Yeah. That's crazy because it's, you know, such a vast, wide idea, but just distilled into such a simple call to action, a personal call, right? You know, I think that's why it hit me so directly. It was like, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What in your life is love?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Some great thinker, I wanted to say Audre Lorde. I thought it was Audre Lorde, but it was some other great thinker. I forget who said, in a poetic way, in a larger context, make the revolution irresistible. And I think art like this does that so effectively.
Yeah.
By making a beautiful thing. I mean, like, if that, but also this, that shows beauty and invites you to witness it, appreciate it, think on it, meditate on it, rather than, as we were saying, like any sort of browbeating, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's not like reading a nonfiction book or even like, I don't know, protest rhetoric and, you know, all good on those things. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the most effective way of actually like changing someone's heart is this sneaky way that films like this, narrative films like this, stories can do that. You listen to a story, you've been snuck into somebody else's perspective.
Yeah, that's true.
And you go through their journey with them. If you're doing your part as a listener.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and to the point of like Christ and how he communicated a lot of his stories, they were mainly through parables, right?
Right.
They're mainly through these like almost like mythologies, if you will, of like, hey, I can't really tell you this directly because you're gonna ignore it. And maybe not take it in. So here's a story.
Great point.
Right?
Yes.
Here's this kind of, yes, roundabout, but yeah, more implicit way of trying to get
it's,
to
it's
what
a
I
bit
said.
Open.
Right.
And then I love the way they use questions in this movie. Jesus asks so many questions.
That's
so
right.
many good questions. He doesn't make a lot of commandments.
Right.
You know, he ain't no right. Moses reading from God.
Yeah.
He asks questions. Makes observations. And these things are so much more open-ended, and it's so much more about you then, about your interpretation, about you doing that work of answering that question.
Yes.
And so the parables, as you mentioned, are these deceptively simple stories. They're just like stories. It's not saying, oh, you got to do this. The moral of the story is, you know, you got to help a person that's beat up by the side of the road.
Right.
Or in the case of like the prodigal son, which is one of my favorite stories ever, period, point blank, period, where it's this son takes his inheritance early, goes off from the father and the brother and the family, spends it all, goes wild, just loosens his morals till they're all shaken out, comes crawling back to his father, who he hasn't talked to, hasn't seen, spent all the money. His father embraces him, so happy to see his son again. Prodigal son will throw you a feast, and the older brother's pissed. He's like, what the fuck, Dad? I worked my ass off. I was a good person this whole time. Where's my feast?
Right.
And in this story, at first to me, it invites us to identify with the prodigal son, which surely we can and should and do, that we have, you know, squandered potential at times, squandered the gifts that we're given, of fucked up and been total bags of crud and have needed forgiveness and needed mercy. And then also we are invited to identify with the Father, as when somebody comes to you in need, even if they've wronged you, they're sorry, you know, embrace them.
Yeah.
And love them. But then the other thing is, I remember I was in the Prodigal Son as a kid. I was in the play. Our church did a play.
Cool.
And my older brother who's just a much better actor than I am, got to play the prodigal son, even though I'm actually younger. I was really wanting that role, and I was pissed.
Yeah,
I was pissed that I got to play the older brother, which was perfect.
Hilarious. Yeah.
And then as we did the play, I realized, oh, this play is also about the older brother. That another thing that we do is judge whether people are deserving or not of that.
Right.
And that's a real vice that I think we all do, like that I would also feel pissed if I had worked hard, done a good job, and then we're going to praise this piece of shit where's my praise? I would want that praise. And so the beauty of that story is that it's just a story, and it's open-ended what the moral is, although it's also quite clear, but there's all these kind of like ways in. And yeah, like you said, it's Jesus wasn't just being like, hey, love each other. He's like, hey, let's, here's a story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what a refreshing, take. Although I think this film didn't do well critically or probably box office wise. It feels like it just is such a fresh look at like a historical time and a really beautiful. What this film made me want to do was kind of like go back through other portions of the Bible and even history and kind of like look through this lens, to be like, not only just like the feminine lens, the woman's perspective, but
to really humanize these now mythologized times in our history.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's so much power there. It's like, whoa, we can help better understand ourselves, what we go through, help better empathize with others.
Yeah.
I think obviously just in the crazy world we live in right now, it's really nice to have a tool like that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's what I have to say, the critics of this movie. I mean, people don't like what they don't like, no problem. I mean, it is like it is also like white Americans playing these Middle Eastern people.
Sure. There's something to be said there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, it kind of goes back to the point of like, can this be depicted by these people?
Yeah.
But, like looking at the heart of this film, it's not like Joaquin and Rooney were like, hey, we can make a lot of money by portraying Jesus and Mary, or we can get a lot of attention through it. It felt like it was like there's this genuine pulse that we can like tap into to help others see what we kind of feel as well.
Yeah.
I can respect that a lot. So.
To the point about representation, it would be nice if the movies didn't have to be star vehicles, or if the movies didn't need stars, because I'm sure that a big part of the reason this movie got financed or was financially successful at all is partly because people come, this very strange phenomenon of fame, the recognition of these famous celebrities. Right. We see a movie with the very beautiful Rooney Mara and the very, I suppose some people consider him handsome and talented, Joaquin Phoenix and other great actors. It probably does provide a big draw. And now that system is so firmly entrenched that if we were to see a movie with people, Middle Eastern no names acting as Jesus and Mary, well, we might not see it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't get that much attention.
Yeah.
It would be nice. I mean, we should continue the fight for greater and greater representation.
That's a really good, unique point. And as you were speaking, an example came to mind. It wasn't a biblical one. It was a historical one. I can't recall what it's called, but it's like, I think it's simply like King Louis the 14th. And it's like a French film about the king. And I think it was like 60s or 70s. And they basically like hired a non-actor to play the king, which is like a very crazy, strange thing to do even for the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching it. I don't even know why I watched it. It wasn't for an assignment or anything. I was just very curious about it, maybe for the director. But it was this interesting effect of like, yeah, I mean, I didn't know, right, that person. I didn't, like, it wasn't Joaquin Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that to connect to. I mean, the film itself was a little slow and kind of plodding, and, you know, there's probably other things wrong with it. But I remember, I think I watched it all, which was like a 2.5 hour film, just because I was like, seeing this like non-actor act out this like king was actually quite unique and interesting. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I maybe bring it up more as like an interesting notion, something to consider, you know, down the road, instead of say making a star vehicle.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting how a film with this same hardened sentiment would play out with non-actors, right?
Yeah, that would be ideal,
right?
But I guess I'm prone to that too. Like, see, if there's an actor that I like a Joaquin Phoenix or something,
yeah,
I'm probably gonna go see that movie. I'm more prone to be like, oh yeah, that's a person that I like, or that's a person that I have a crush on.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll bite. But there are so many great movies with total non-actors. That's part of the reason I brought this up in the last episode of the podcast, and probably before. Andrea Arnold, her movies, the center of them are always a non-actor,
right?
And it's so compelling, and you're like, how is this not a highly trained actor? You're getting these very raw, subtle human performances.
That's a very good point. American Honey is the one you brought up.
Yeah,
and actually, interesting enough, that same actress.
Yeah, she's in Utopia.
Yeah, in Utopia. I started watching that, and I don't know if it's the role or her, like, oh, I'm an actress now, but it feels odd.
Oh, yeah.
It feels different. It feels like she is playing this, like, badass, real-life comic book character, which is what she is in the show. But I was like, some of that, like, mystical charm of being just, like, an unknown is kind of gone.
Right.
You know, it's like you're in a vehicle. You're in that star vehicle now, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I mean, not to criticize it. It's just,
more
of a curiosity. But yes, well, Anthony, my friend, we have done pretty good, I think.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it has been really
good. Thanks for letting me invade your space for one of these 0.5s.
No problem. Thanks for coming to bring hummus.
You're welcome. Yeah, I brought the noisiest friend in the world.
I think it's perfectly fine. So, I think we call it there. Go watch the film, please. It is wonderful.
You probably won't regret it. If you do, I'll e-transfer you 50 cents.
He will do it too. So
I will. I'm good for it.
Take him off on that.
And my transfers cost me $150 each. So I'm losing $2 on that deal. I really hope you like this movie.
Well, with that being said, watchers, listeners, thank you very much. We sign off today, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Prairie Film Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye. Let's just have a really long time of us doing this.
Yeah. Just 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Just make some bullshit credits to go.